Welcome to the Education Investment Podcast. In a world where investors are looking for stable and growing long-term returns with social impact, the education sector is becoming increasingly attractive. We speak to leading educators, operators, and investors in the education sector around the world to explore this growing investment theme alongside our listeners. From preschools to K-12 schools to higher education and vocational education, from edtech to education infrastructure, from VC investors to private equity and family offices, we explore it all. I'm your host, Monde Ngosi. Education has always been a big part of my life because my mother founded a school which was across the road from our home. I have benefited from excellent schools and teachers in South Africa and the US. I went on to study education and am now very grateful to be an investor in the sector that I love.
All opinions expressed by podcast guests are solely their own opinions. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Today, I am privileged to host Uthando Bakumeni for a conversation on the business of school sports in Africa. We'll explore the human side of school sport, such as its role in communities and in unearthing talent. And we'll also explore the commercial side of school sport. We'll also discuss the social impact of the sector and find out what Uthando is excited about in the future of school sport. Uthando is the head of SuperSport Schools, the premier streaming and broadcast platform for school and youth sport in Africa, with over 1 million registered users. Prior to SuperSport Schools, Tando was a senior manager for Africa Sport at SuperSport, covering a wide range of countries, including Nigeria, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Zambia. Tando started his career in sports marketing at Playmakers. He holds qualifications in sports management and business administration from the University of Pretoria and Wits. I've known Tando for a long time, and in many ways, our friendship started because of a mutual love for sport. Tando, it's wonderful to have you here today. Welcome to the pod.
Monde, thanks for having me, man. Been looking forward to this for a while.
Wonderful to have you here. So before we get to school sport and all the rest of it, I want to start by learning about Tando. So please tell us a bit about your family, a bit about where you grew up and your journey that has brought you to where you are today.
Cool. So I was born and raised in the Eastern Cape in a small town called King Williamstown, which is what is formerly known as the Siskei in the Eastern Cape. My parents were professionals. Well, my dad is still practicing actually as a medical practitioner in King. My mom was a nurse by profession. And I think, you know, they instilled discipline in us. In fact, my mom, who we lost like a few years ago, was the main disciplinarian in the house. I think, you know, it distilled humility in us as well. And they also valued education, you know, as much as they were professionals, they really sacrificed, for us to go to the best schools that we could go to in the country. And that really instilled, you know, that ethos in us. You know, I'm one of three kids. I've got two younger brothers. And I think there's a lot of principles and values in the way that I was raised that I still try to emulate, you know, with my young family and within my marriage as well, going forward, you know. And I think in terms of like going back to my parents, I think of how, you know, how I'm where I'm at today. My mother played a very big part in that. She was the kind of person who's very protective about her kids, also very staunch and pushed to make sure that we make the progress we're supposed to make. As you would know, you know, life can take its twists and turns. You can have some fun here and there. So she brought me back. She was able to bring me back, you know, to the straight and narrow. And my dad, you know, very much the provider. He loved sport. He still loves sport. I think we're fortunate that we didn't have to, well, we didn't have a choice between DSTV subscription or food, because it would have been an awkward decision in that household. Because, you know, sport was everything, and it's very much shaped who I am today. I've loved sport from a very young age, and obviously, you know, with the career path that I'm in now, it's kind of clear how much of an influence that had.
That's wonderful. That's both the tribute to your mother there and the values that she instilled in you, which I've seen in our friendship, the humility and the love for education, which you spoke about, as well as the broader family context. That was lovely to hear. You mentioned your dad loved sport, so I'm keen to dig a bit deeper in that. And you mentioned you have two younger brothers as well. So what are some of the sports teams that are supported in the house? Are there some rivalries, or are you all behind the same teams, and across what sports?
This question usually gets me into a bit of trouble. You know, I my dad supported the All Blacks since I was born. Like, that's all I knew. So I grew up very much a staunch All Black supporter as well. That's changed a bit, you know, in latter years. You know, I think he had his reasons for supporting them as well, you know, with the complexities in the country back in the day. And I think, you know, what has shaped us is that we've seen change in front of our eyes, which is why, you know, now I've softened quite a bit to the Springboks and what they've been building, you know, over the last few years. And I think, you know, my brothers also kind of followed suit when it came to the rugby side. I think you'll hear me speaking about rugby and cricket because it's very much a makeup of the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape, those are kind of the first loves that you follow. Football is the global game, so it ends up influencing you. On that front, I'm an Arsenal fan. Thierry Henry pulled me into supporting Arsenal. Again, I mean, that was a very long time ago.
For your sins.
Yes, yes, very much so. And, you know, it comes with this fair share of frustration and pain as well. Yeah. But, you know, we have some moments, and I think this year or this season might be our season as well.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And I mean, that story you speak about from the Springboks being an exclusively white team under apartheid to what we see in front of us today, I mean, it did alienate a lot of people, as you say, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, who didn't support the Springboks at that time, but they've come to represent an entire nation. And it's, I mean, in a short space of time, over the course of our lifetime, it's quite an extraordinary transformation. So I'm glad we can now go to Springbok games on the same side and supporting the same team. Yeah. I'm keen to continue double-clicking on you. You've got to give me some more clubs. So you've got Arsenal in soccer, you've given me the national sides in rugby. Mm-hmm. What club sides do you support in rugby and in cricket as well?
I think you're making me dig a deeper hole here.
Go for it. Go
club
for it.
Sides in rugby, I've always been a Crusaders fan. You know, people think I'm basically a fair weather friend. You know, that's a team that's won the most. But I was a fly half in school. Part of that reason was watching Andrew Mertens from a very young age. And I loved Andrew Mertens. So, you know, that's the team I supported here. And in terms of South Africa as well, you know, I think the soft spots have kind of been from the Stormers and the Sharks. I'm not like a staunch supporter. You know, I don't lie in bed in pain like Arsenal makes me feel if things don't go their way. But I do support those teams, you know, and I think there was always a bit of banter in the households. My brothers supported South African clubs, even though they supported the All Blacks in terms of the team itself, the national team. But yeah, and I think, you know, on the cricket front, Proteas, not so much the club sides, didn't have a massive influence. And then, you know, the funny story about South African football is that if you ask me which team I support, I'll tell you that I support Chiefs. The reason for that
is you're clearly not a fair weather friend.
Exactly. The reason for that is because my father also supported Chiefs. But the story he told us is that so he was at varsity in the Eastern Cape. So he did a BSc at Fort Hare. And then when he moved up to Madunsa, up in Pretoria, he stayed with my uncle. So his sister's husband. He stayed with him. And when he got to the house, my sister's husband was a Kaizer Chiefs fan, but my dad was actually an Orlando Pirates fan. And purely because he needed a roof over his head, he's like, he can't play this game. And from that day, from the day he arrived in Johannesburg, he's been a staunch Chiefs fan. He feels the pain, you know, as things aren't going well. So, you know, that's one of the really funny stories from his side. And I guess that's how I identify with the team as well.
We went them through the highs and lows. I share that love for Chiefs as well. I'd love to hear then, you've in your journey, you've chosen to focus now at this stage in your career on school sport. So still staying in your childhood, what role did school sport play in your life and your brothers as well?
A very big role. So I think one of my big influences is that I was in boarding school from the age of six. It's kind of a scary subject now when I look at my two young boys and I think, man, they'll be six quite soon.
They've ended that practice. My sisters were also in boarding school, three of my sisters from grade one.
Yeah,
they've ended that practice.
Indeed, you know. I loved every minute of it, but I don't think I'll send my kids to boarding school when they're 6 years old. But obviously, we then partook in sport like right from the beginning. I think that's why I loved cricket so much when I started, because you just sit there and you just practice and practice and practice. They tell you you've got a throwing action, so now you've got to make sure that it's a round arm technique. So we played from a very young age, and it also just, it instills discipline. Like, you need to be at a certain place at a certain time. It comes with teamwork as well. There are leadership lessons that you learn as well. You know, when you're fortunate enough to be leading a very young team, I think at that age, you don't really know like what you're doing, but you know how to act in that role, you know, and it really instills that discipline going forward. And I think it influences how we do things even now, at our age and with our careers.
Absolutely. For me, the biggest lesson that I've taken for life from school sport, which, as you know, it is a big part of my life as well, is not being able to do something, practicing at it, and then getting good at it, which I think life is a series of just repeat doing that on different topics as you go through life. And having the confidence to know that, no, man, I don't know how to do this now, but there's someone who does know how to do it, who can teach me how to do it, and then I've just got to practice.
Exactly.
And I can, there's nothing that's, you know, entirely beyond me. I haven't yet gotten to theoretical physics or anything like that, so maybe I'm still to discover the things that are beyond me. But by and large, going through life, it's played a big role in my life. The final question then that I'd ask just on you first before we come to super sport and school sports, is just when you look over your whole journey to date, what do you consider some of the most formative experiences in your life so far?
I think, it stems from home again. You know, I think the boarding school part that I just mentioned is a very big part of that. I think that independence that came from that as well, you know, we've been basically operating and then looking after ourselves from a very young age. And I say ourselves because I was thinking of my brothers as well. And that was a very big influence. In terms of the educational part, that was my parents. They were obviously making sure that, listen, you know what's important and what is not, and what can basically aid you in your career growth going forward. And then the sport part, I think I spoke about it extensively now with my dad, you know, and he knows it as well. The other day, I'd forgotten what I sent him, like in terms of something we recorded at work, and I sent it to him. And I think you may resonate with this, that with our parents, if you're not a doctor or lawyer or accountant, you know, if you're saying you're studying sports management, it's what's that?
No, you're even adding three. There's two careers. Two careers. You're either a doctor or you're a failure.
That's it.
Those are the two careers.
That's it, you know. So, you know, I said I study sports management, and I said, you know, I was in sports marketing agency, and every single time I would go home, what do you do again? And they would name a brand that was one of my clients and say, aren't you at that place? So they never quite understood it, but now that, you know, I'm at SuperSport and obviously we're doing what we're doing, now he completely understands, and now there's a massive sense of pride, you know. So when I sent him a clip of an interview that I did, the first thing he said is, like, you know, he's very emotional, and he says the emotion's coming from a place of knowing why I'm in the field that I'm in. And obviously that's attributed to him and his love and love for sport. Yeah,
that's beautiful. Honestly, that's wonderful to hear. And thanks for sharing openly about both your family, your context, and what's brought you to this point to be the Tando that we know. So let's move on then to some of the main topics for discussion in school sport. Let's just start right at the beginning. What is Super Sport Schools and what does it do?
So Super Sport Schools is a youth and school sport broadcasting platform. And I say youth and school because obviously looking at the name of it, people could think that we only cover school sports. But from a youth perspective, we also cover organized sport, from a club perspective, from a federation perspective. And that's all broadcast and streamed within the platforms that we have. So it started off with just the app, so Super Sport Schools app, which is very active now. Anything that we stream or produce is actually found on that app. And again, that's harnessing the power of aggregation. That's a common theme within the multi-choice, building multi-choice ethos. And then what happened is that it started evolving as well. We've got a channel now, a DSTV channel 216, which is obviously the linear that we do there. But obviously, if you think about the scale that we produce at, there's only a number of feature games that can go on that channel. So that's selected on a criteria, but there are various aspects that we need to consider. The reason we're able to do what we do is because we harness the power of technology. COVID was a very, very torrid period of time, but what it did is that it also sped up the technological advancements at the time. So we use AI cameras, which are obviously fully automated, as the name suggests. But what we can do then is that there's a massive reduction in the cost that we incur in terms of producing these games. We don't only use AI cameras. There's a mix of what we call like 2-cam or 3-cam. For example, if you're watching like a Soweto Derby, that can go up to like 18-cam. But indeed, the reason we're able to do what we do is because the reduced costs allow us. So we reduce the spec. And what we're providing for people is what they didn't have before. And that's why I speak of the aggregation part, because it aids discoverability. Because before, yes, people were streaming some games. I mean, back when we were in school, some people had video cameras and obviously recording some of the games that we had, but it was very hard to find them.
It's usually a very keen parent.
Exactly.
Rather than anything professional.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But now you go to one place, you go to SuperSport School's app, and obviously you can then find everything there which is produced at scale.
Okay, that's fascinating. And I'm going to come back to that technology point, because I'm quite interested in, and fascinated by that. Mm-hmm. But just still on the context of what you do, what geographies do you cover? What sporting codes do you cover? What's proven popular? Is it boys sport only, girls sport only? Is it mixed? Give us a bit more of the color.
Very much mixed. So boys and girls right across the board. In terms of the geographies that we cover, we're primarily in South Africa. We've covered in Zimbabwe and Namibia. But if you think of the landscape of multi-choice, it's obviously sub-Saharan. So we have great ambitions to cover sport right across the continent as well going forward. In terms of the most popular ones, I think you'd have to look at the winter season. The winter season is obviously massive. Rugby leads the way. That's just because of the South African schoolboy system, or schoolgirl system as well. But it's followed up, well, it's obviously supplemented by hockey and netball, which is very big. We, in terms of sporting codes, like, yes, the winter season is popular, but 2024 we covered over 50 sporting codes. That's a wild number. Like before I was involved in the system, it's like, how are there more than 50 sporting codes, you know?
But that help me understand, is like singles tennis, doubles tennis, are those two sporting codes?
Not at all.
Tennis as
well. Not at all.
How cute
that's
are you
tennis.
Getting in the definition?
That's tennis. But if you think about it, it's the rugby, cricket, footballs that we all know, hockey. But it ranges from things like softball.
Yes.
Like some people may not know there is softball activity in this country. All the way up to like sheep shearing.
Sheep shearing.
Okay,
interesting.
So multiple sporting codes that are covered. Obviously, like in terms of criteria, we have to select where we go, because it's the kind of thing that, as much as we'd love to cover a lot, we can't get to everything. But we also acknowledge the development that has taken place and the work that's been done in a very short space of time, because SuperSport Schools has been going since 2021.
Wow, yeah. That's extraordinary. Since 2021 and over a million subscribers already, yeah. That's extraordinary growth. Mm-hmm. And I'm intrigued, you cover 50 sporting codes, which is a lot wider than I expected. Mm-hmm. Is this limited to physical sports? Is there esports as well? Does that fit within your mandate?
So it's definitely not limited to physical sports. Esports is actually not new to the SuperSports table. So what I mean by that is that we actually had a dedicated esports channel at one stage, and now we've started going into it again. I mean, there's no ignoring esports. If you think of the African landscape, you know, and the increase in internet penetration as well, it's really aiding that to grow. We know that it's going to get to a place where you actually have to be in the game. On the SuperSport School side, again, I spoke about content aggregation. So we're not just producing and streaming, but it's about having the content on your platform as well. And we've got an esports magazine show called Gameplay, which plays on a weekly basis every single Thursday. And there, effectively, we get content from some of our partners, gaming publishers like Carry First, ACGL that we work with as well. There's content that they cover, I mean, on almost like a daily or weekly basis. So you get the athletes that come onto the show as well, speak to the activity that they have, and we cross to content that is basically taking place across the continent. And it's not just esports. Like with SuperSport Schools, and I think it may be actually counted in the sporting codes and everything, we also cover cultural elements. So things think matric dances, okay. Yeah, debate meets, that kind of thing, concerts, which can also be very popular. Obviously, I mean, that's also down to just the loyal base that we have, where people are watching their own kids or own family members.
Mm. Oh, that's just far wider, as I said, than I expected. Yeah. So before we dive further in this, please give us just a sense of the context of what role does school sport. You can pick a sport and pick an example of a fixture, for instance, in these geographies you cover. So mainly South Africa. What role does it play in the community? Give me a bit of a sense of this. Is this 500 people around or 25,000? Give me a sense of what role it plays.
It is massive. And I love the fact that you asked me this question, because just recently I went down to Paul Interschools, which is the biggest school boy derby in the world.
Yes.
And that's between Paul Boys High and Paul Gym. So
Paul Gym.
Sorry. You're definitely correct. It is definitely him. But I went down there for the first time. I've obviously heard about this derby many times before. 25,000 people coming to watch the first team game. It actually can't be hosted at one of the schools. So they host it at the Borland Stadium. But it's not just about the rugby. Like, you enter the town, like on the Friday, there's assemblies and everything where each captain, sporting code captain, goes up and speaks. Mm. The chess captain is speaking to the rugby captain, you know, like basically saying, listen, guys, we've got this game, like that kind of stuff that you don't expect to see. And the town comes to a standstill because you drive in and the trees are wrapped in the different colors. So you got Gym colors, you've got Boys High colors, you've got the girls' school colors. And it's just a sense of anticipation that builds up right up until the first team rugby game. Mm. And the game itself was an amazing advertisement for rugby. Mm. It was back and forth.
I watched it actually.
Yeah.
It was right until the end. It was a wonderful game.
Indeed. Yeah. It was amazing, you know, but that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Everyone is wearing their jersey or their old school ties. Everyone is within the culture of it. And it doesn't just stop there. Like, it's not just schools, actually. Like, if I think of the club scene on the football side, you know, we also cover GDL, so Gauteng Development League.
Yes.
And one of our biggest viewed games last year was under 13 game between Sundowns and Chiefs. Obviously, biggest clubs in the country.
Under 13
wow. With over 220,000 people tuning in the Sunday morning.
Wow.
So it really is.
That would be
culture.
More than a lot of PSL games. Some of the smaller PSL games, no?
220,000. Yes. Yeah.
That's surprising.
It's massive.
Okay. Look, I've seen this firsthand, what you're describing. The town in Paarl comes to a standstill.
Yes.
And that's not limited, obviously, the Paarl Derby is very special, but that's not limited to there. You see it all over the country, on a Saturday or even on a Friday the day before. Parents, those rivalries run deep, and the students themselves and these, you know, carry on through life. So it plays a big role in the community and in unearthing talent. Now this culture, you've actually just started touching on it. So, is it limited to sort of very wealthy, elite private schools, or do you find it even in, let's say, non-fee paying schools, the level of sports participation and the impact that it has on the community involvement and the people coming to watch?
So what the wealthy schools benefit from is pretty much the infrastructures that are in place, and obviously the history of having organized sport and everything that is put in place, from the facilities themselves to the teachers or coaches in place, right?
Yeah.
But it's certainly not restricted to them. There's a lot of coverage that we have in all parts of the country, rural, urban, everything under the sun. And it's also like there's specific references that I can actually draw. You know, I think of the Western Cape Education Department. So they've got this MOD program. So MOD is Mass Participation, Opportunity and Access, and Development and Growth. That's what it kind of stands for. But effectively, what they've done is build these shared facilities. So if you think of schools like in those areas of the Western Cape, there's no sports facilities on the schools. Mm. So there's shared facilities that the kids then get access to as like extramurals after school. Mm. And there are over 180 of those facilities, over, I think, 40,000 kids take part. And they've obviously got community workers that are closing in on 1,000 that actually volunteer to make sure that they can facilitate this. And on the premises, what you'll find is astroturfs, you know, court sports, swimming pools. So it's all administered, and obviously it has great benefits, because some of the schools, as I said, don't have access to these elements, but by giving them access, obviously then they get to benefit from the benefits of sport, taking part in sport, which
probably the most important one is keeping kids out of trouble, because with dead time, you can get up to mischief as well. But it's a responsible initiative. And what we do is that even though we can't come on like all the time and sponsor or fund these initiatives, what we do have is the mouthpiece and the platform. So we amplify these when they have an opening of facilities. We're there to capture the content. We've got various marketing platforms that we can obviously utilize for them as well, give them space in our newsletter, which can also help them attract the funding that could obviously enhance what they're trying to do.
That's phenomenal. You know, I spend a decent amount of time on the real estate side of education, and to put up now a private school with all the sports fields and the swimming pools and all of that in South Africa is probably around 120 million rand. So I think it would be unrealistic if we felt that that's going to be the model that's going to replicate for all kids to play sport. So I hadn't actually come across this MOD program, but it's exactly what you need: the shared facilities, and then the actual schools are a lot cheaper to build. It's sort of an admin block and an academic block, fairly straightforward. But it gives then separately kids the opportunity to participate in sport. So that's wonderful to hear, and the work you're doing as a mouthpiece for that as well. So let's talk then a bit about unearthing talent, and I want you to make this real for me. If you can find me one example, let's pick one example for me of a child that you've seen on the Super Sports Schools app, knowing it's recent, 2021. So all very recent, but who has gone on to either play professionally or you feel is on the path to go and play professionally.
There's actually quite a few. We're fortunate in that regard, you know, because obviously this is a question that comes up the whole time. And it actually comes up because of why Super Sports Schools came to life. And it dates back all the way to 2019. You know, some of our leaders at the time were watching the Rugby World Cup, the one that we won, obviously, with CS team the first
time. Which one?
The first one. I'm a Springbok fan now. CS first one, you know. And they had an earnest discussion around how, guys, we're watching the Springboks, they're successful, but the only reason they're successful is because of the schooling system and the rich schooling culture and sports culture that we have in South Africa. And if you think about it from a super sport perspective, if we aren't aiding that level underneath, who are the sports stars that you're going to see or subscribe for on Super Sport as well to actually watch later on in life? So decisions were taken then, and the guys moved fairly quickly. Obviously, there were a few hiccups here and there because of COVID, but they eventually got started. But the whole thing, the whole premise of it was unearthing talent. And if you look at the platform now, you know, there's two or three that I can even name now. A guy like Riley Norton,
who just
captained the...
Phenomenal.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, captained the rugby under-20s to a world championship, and the year before he was playing SNN19 cricket, also on our platform. I think of Gwena Mapaga, who was obviously, as a schoolboy, called up, was playing IPL. At the end of that year was a pro tier already, and he's starting to be a regular within that squad now. Mayanda Walaza, hopefully we're going to see him in the world championships this year. He won a silver medal at the Olympics as a schoolboy. So it's incredible stories like that. It's just, I mean, that's just three people that I've touched on, but they're quite a few more that I could speak of, and quite a few more we're going to see in the next couple of years as well.
That's absolutely wonderful. And I like as well that you address different sporting codes in there as well. You've got athletics, you've got cricket, you've got rugby and cricket in the same person in one instance. They've already achieved so much, and looking forward to seeing what they continue to achieve. So I think they're excellent examples of people that have gotten exposure from your platform and are going on to do amazing things for their sports and for the country. If I take then school sport, I think of it in two ways. It has a supply side, so the matches that are being played, right? Yes. How many of these is there? And then also there's the demand side, which you can come to. So how many people want to watch these matches? But if I just start on the supply side, I saw a statistic that in 2024, so last year, you filmed 60,000 sports matches, which is a hell of a lot, right? So give me a bit of color on the supply side of this. You've already spoken about how many different sporting codes there are, but just 60,000, is that, in your view, a drop in the ocean? Is that as high as we're going? Just how big is the supply side of this market?
I think that's exactly where I was going to land, is that it's just a drop in the ocean. You know, we know that we're the biggest player in the market and obviously producing at scale, but there's so many that we don't get to. And obviously there's a multitude of reasons as to why not. But the stat that you're talking about as well, I mean, it's over 58,000 hours of live content last year. If you're thinking from an event and school perspective, it's like 3,500 schools that we got to, and that's across 4,500 events. So we know that we got to a lot, but at the same time, there's so much more because we see it all the time. We see that, okay, fine, some people are trying to stream onto their own platform. Some people are requesting from us, and you know, there's a balance before the business itself that we're trying to make sustainable, and that, okay, fine, sometimes we don't actually have the capacity to do it. And I think the trend is the same globally. You know, there's a recent Pixelart analysis that I saw, speaking about, I think 27 million Americans are taking part in American youth sport. And 85% of those went uncovered in 2023.
Sure.
So it's a drop in the ocean. I think that it's across the board. I've said to you, we've got ambitions to obviously look further in the rest of Africa as well. Mm-hmm. And there aren't any big players like us. In terms of streaming and actually broadcasting youth sports. So we're very excited about that journey ahead.
Okay. That's, F60,000 is a drop in the ocean. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes. And if I come over then to the demand side, right? I mentioned up front in the introduction that SuperSport Schools has over 1 million registered users, of which I am one.
I'm glad to hear
adding
that.
To the numbers. So how large do you think the market is in terms of how many people want to watch school sport?
It's a very difficult one to answer. Is that, like, I mean, the exact quantification, right? We've grown very quickly, and we acknowledge that. I mean, it's great that we over 1.3 million subscribers at this point, or registered users. But I think it's a mix between the two, because earlier we were talking about the people that are physically on the ground. And there's a stat saying, listen, there's probably around 1 million parents that are at fields every single Saturday across South Africa, wow, watching their kids play sport. So there's that part, and then there's the part where we're providing access, where you can be in Johannesburg and watch your daughter play in Cape Town. So we know that the demand is
there. Or you can be in New York and watch your old school play.
Exactly.
Durban,
exactly. Exactly, you know. So the demand is massive. I think another crazy stat, and I know that I've kind of been churning them out now, but last year we had over 2.8 billion minutes of content consumed on our platforms. So it's very hard to actually quantify that and make it like practical. So it's still going to grow. Where it may plateau, we don't know yet. But what we're thriving on is providing that access. And I like the fact that you touched on the fact that you could be in New York and watching someone play here in South Africa, because what helps is that our app is actually available globally. So you can log onto the app and you can watch. We see that I think 8% of the content or the consumption came from outside the country. Again, it's like neighboring Southern African countries, but hits in the US, hits in the UK. And I think that's also just an indication of a few things. Like, some of the things are expats that are obviously trying to tune in. Some is just a general interest in youth sport. And I guess, you know, I think another part of it is that we're seeing more and more, I don't want to call it the professionalization of youth sport, but you know, scouts are interested, you know, people that are watching from overseas. We've seen in athletics how many of our youth actually go across to US varsities as well. And they're engaging through our platform to actually find people that would obviously be suitable for what they're trying to drive that side.
Look, I remember we were at school at exactly the same time, so I'm sure you will too. But if you wanted to, let's say, go study in the US and play golf or whatever the case may be, you needed an agent who comes and makes a highlights reel of you and all your stuff and then takes it abroad. So this is the kind of exposure that it doesn't quite bypass the agents. There's still a role for them in here overall. But it massively makes it easier to discover talent on a global basis. So yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to come of that. The other point that you mentioned here, you've said a lot of statistics, but one that stuck with me was 3,500 schools you went to last year. Yes. which is that's massive. That's absolutely massive. So I'm intrigued by this. You know, SuperSport is a business. You have a P&L, you have listed shareholders, so you can't be doing it all for free. You know, we all see the social benefit, the community benefit, the benefit to unearthing talent and those individuals. So we see all of that benefit. But how do you generate revenue, and how does this model work, going out to, as I said, 3,500 schools in a single year? How does that work?
And I guess the interesting part is that we're very different from everything else within the multi-choice stable. You know, when you subscribe to DSTV, you pay a subscription fee, you pay per month, whereas we are absolutely free. So you can download the app, you can access it, because we're based on a purely AVOD model. So advertising video on demand. And our whole purpose is to say, okay, fine, we want to give people access to youth sport. We're going to produce it at scale, but we're also going to offer brands the opportunity to engage with the viewers or consumers on their platform. I think I briefly touched on now how loyal that base is. It's the most intensely loyal that you are probably going to find right across, because you're talking parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, peers that are watching each other. So they're all on the platform, and obviously it's a great opportunity for brands to engage. In terms of how everything is structured, again, if you think about the traditional sense, when you're watching sport on TV, you'll get the traditional L bars, which are called like squeezebacks, logos on screen. That's how we sell there. But ours is more dynamic. We have some action triggered elements that come through. So if you think of a goal in a football game, a try, then you get an ad coming up. We obviously mix that up with things like 30 seconders, which are more traditional. And then we have non-live content like magazine shows, which also offers a space there. So, and it's very diverse in terms of the range. Like we don't really limit it. You know, you get clients that come in and spend in the hundreds of thousands. Some of them spend all the way up to 12 million. And obviously the period that they come on and they're part of our partners in commercial sales obviously differs from team to team, but we have a full sales force that goes out to actually to make sure that we make those sales and driving to a place that we're making our product sustainable.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's very clear. And that then, so that I understand the revenue side, the cost side. You touched a little bit on the use of technology and AI cameras. I said I'd come back to it. So, so talk to me. How do you limit the cost side to get out to so many schools and still make the economic model work?
Yeah, it's a balancing game. It definitely is, you know. And we mix up. That's why I said, you know, in terms of technology, we've got the AI cameras, but we've also got traditional, more of a traditional spec. What happens is that it's actually very closely linked to some of the revenue partners that we have. I'll give you an example of the King Price Derby series, which took place this year, that Paul Interschools actually fell under that property. And that's a different model to what we've done before. And that's again aimed at sustainability, because what you saw before is you saw derbies that are televised, but it was very few. It was kind of the big traditional schools. Whereas we made it more inclusive this year. So we partnered up with Pro Vantage Sports. They got King Price coming on as a title sponsor. So they raised sponsorship funds on their sides, which obviously covers the production cost, but it also then gives us an indication of what spec we can actually go at. So it's not, it wasn't just AI cameras. That was a few camera spec, like five or six camera spec that we used in those games. But that's because it was offset within this model against the revenue that was coming in. So it's going to differ from each decision that we actually make. And obviously, I mean, with starting a business, you're going to ramp up the cost because you need to build the platform and then draw in the revenue. But we're trying to make sure that we close and close that gap as we go along.
It's the classic chicken and egg in business.
Exactly.
You've got to make a start and go and get. And the growth is phenomenal. In the time since we last caught up and this conversation, you've gone from 1 million to 1.3, 30% growth. So you still continue, even though it's at a big scale already. Continuing to grow, and you've touched on in several parts of the conversation several partners that you work with, the advertisers you've just touched on. I think it was Pro Vantage Sports which you mentioned. Anything else you want to mention on the broader community or set of partnerships around this?
So there's, we've got a very big stable of commercial partners. They range in terms of what they target in terms of the advertising. Takealot is a very big partner of ours. And how it usually works is that we talked about content aggregation, but also aggregation across our revenue partners. So all of our properties, you know, the revenue partners get allocations where you can get their exposure and obviously appeal to the consumer. But there's some of them that jump on and obviously target a certain niche. For example, Spur sponsors Gauteng Development League, as well as our podcast. You've got Thirsty that sponsors our rugby magazine show. So some of them are very targeted, and I've obviously just spoken to King Price as well now. But again, as I said, it ranges, and I think, you know, the opportunities that are offered to them, they can tailor, and things are getting... You have to think more these days. I mean, right across the board in business, right? Way back in the day, it was kind of logo on screen and that's it.
Yeah, it's not just cookie cutter.
It's exactly. So we're curating content with our partners, which is what makes it very attractive for them. So we know what the kind of appeal that they're looking for. If you're talking about Uber Teens, obviously our platform engages with that audience, but they're driving a responsibility message. So how are we engaging with them to actually curate content that speaks to the responsibility part and how to use things safely? So it's really evolving, but you know, it's an exciting space to play in. And we've got, there's so much opportunity, even within the content that we produce now. We've still got plenty of space to get some more sponsors on board as well, and obviously curate according to their needs.
Okay, that's wonderful. I must thank your sponsors, because there's a school that I saw this year on SuperSport Schools for the first time and tracked, but I'd never played against them. I mean, I'd heard of them, but never thought of them as a big rugby school. But this year, watching Gaarsfontein was something truly special. Yeah. And I never would have had that opportunity, but that's the kind of exposure which you see. And it was an electric rugby.
That's the power of it.
Exactly, yeah. Electric. This was the first time that I'd seen the school play rugby. Another topic that I'm keen to discuss is the subtle balance that's needed here. Some of these children, like those who you've described, Bando Alaza, some of them are going to go on to be superstars, going to go on to be professionals in their various sporting codes. And some are not, but maybe like us, I think we'd be good examples of that. We partook in the schoolboy rugby, in the schoolboy sports system. Yeah. But we're in varying careers at this stage, and that has informed our journey, but we didn't go the professional path. So how are you managing this balance to not overly professionalize school sport?
It's a very good shout, because I think what we do is kind of a double-edged sword, because we're trying to drive as much exposure as possible. But on the flip side, there's some pressures and adverse effects that could come with that, providing that spotlight right across the board. So what we try to focus on is driving a positive narrative throughout. So there are going to be success stories of kids that are actually trying to make it further in life. But the message that we drive is positivity. It's inclusion and participation in sport. It's celebrating people coming together through sport. Mm-hmm. It's celebrating providing access to it. And I think a very big part as well is actually some of the ancillary content that we have, because we've got our live content and non-live things that we produce and stream, right? Like live games and magazine shows. But the user-generated content in youth sport is everything. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that we amplify. If you think the war cries that you see all the time, it's amazing to see. It goes viral and everything, but there's also some good causes that the schools are taking up, not initiated by us. So they'll raise mental health awareness, fighting against GBV, and what we do is that, obviously, as partner schools of ours, we make that connection with them and we amplify and use the platform that we have to drive that positive message.
Oh, that's wonderful. And something I'd add on what you're saying is the breadth of what you cover as well. So it's not only celebrating those who are on the field, but I'll take the example of, there's the young commentator from Dale College.
Yes.
who's just finishing matric as we speak, who has gotten a phenomenal platform. Yeah. He's phenomenally talented himself as a commentator, but a platform which, it would have been known in his school, maybe a few other schools around there. This talent that he has now is a nationwide phenomenon.
And it's great to see that passion, that passion and development that he's made. He's very passionate about SuperSport Schools, about his career and what he tried to do going forward. So it's really good to see.
Yeah, exactly. So it plays, there's a role for everyone, basically, that inclusivity you're talking about. It's not the one or two superstars only that are going to go as professional sports people. So if we put on our hats now and we're looking forward, what are you excited about in the future? It could be school sports, could be sports innovation. What are some of the things that you're excited about?
I'm excited about how we need to continue evolving. I think I spoke about the technology part. That's why we got ahead of the game, because we actually embraced it. But at the same time, we've got to keep evolving according to what is happening out there. We're still the biggest player in the market when it comes to Africa, but there are other players like us popping up across Europe, in the States as well. What are they doing? What are those global strategies that we could pull from and incorporate on our side to make sure that we stay at the forefront of this? I think looking forward, it's also kind of making sure we find that balance, because the balanced part is like, yes, we want to advance, but we need to remain responsible, drive a positive narrative. Mm-hmm. How are we going to balance that? How are we going to get to a place where we're proud of the platform growing, but we're making sure that everything around that is positive as well. Mm-hmm. So it's the evolution of it all.
Just keep them off social media. If you want to keep things positive, keep them off Twitter, keep them off TikTok.
But again, that's why I said double-edged sword, because, you know, there's that messaging, then there's, okay, we've got user-generated content that we want them to engage with on the social platforms.
So that's where the engagement would come
from. Yes, exactly. So I'm very excited about the evolution of it all, where we land, how we can keep on growing. Obviously talking about Africa as well, you know, the opportunities that are there, and where we can take this to.
Okay, that's wonderful. Look, some of that user-generated content is quite special. I've seen some of those highlights reels of Alzeden Felix, Zagatelo Siaya, some of, you know, schoolboys who are becoming household
names.
Some
of them make it global. I don't know if you've seen Will Smith remixing a song where it was a war cry from this side. It's amazing stuff. You know, Drake reposted Northwood war cries.
Oh, all
You're showing your true colors there. So it's really global, you know, and that's the power of it all. Yeah.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. Timon, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation on school sports. It's taken me back down memory lane in many ways, but also into the future, because everything that you're describing here, the use of technology and where this is going, is very, very exciting. So wishing you well on this journey, and we'll continue to subscribe and support and watch the videos and go to some of these schoolboy matches in real life as well. So as I come off then the topic of school sports and come back to Uthando, back to where we started with you, I ask the same concluding question to all of our guests, and it's my favorite question, and that's, please tell me about one of your favorite teachers or educators or lecturers.
I'm glad I knew this one was coming, because at least I engaged in your product, because I had to think long and hard about this one. You know, it's not something I ordinarily just think about, but when I actually started thinking about it, it actually came quite easily. Like, I had to think hard, but it came quite easily. And Dr. Marguerite Poland came to mind. She's obviously got a storied career as an author and an educator as well, and she only taught me for 1 year in high school, so that's why it was surprising that it just came to my mind immediately like that, you know. But I think, you know, even thinking about the conversation that we've had just now, when you think of a schoolboy or schoolgirl, most of the time all they pretty much need is a teacher, an educator, a coach that just believes in them. Just believes in them, you know. And she believed in me, and you know, I'll never forget that. It's always just stuck with me.
That's wonderful. It's about how people make you feel at the end of the day, rather than the specific words they're saying. That's beautiful. And right at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned another, which was your mother, and you gave a wonderful tribute to her. So this is wonderful, both to Dr. Marguerite Poland as well as to your parents, which you gave right at the beginning of this conversation. Tando, I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and spending time with you here today, and I learned a lot from it. So thank you very much for coming on today.
Mwende, thank you. Also thoroughly enjoyed it, man.